Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Today, where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in sunny South Florida.
Which makes every Canadian jealous.
Well, you know, I really miss winter. I read about 20-degree temperatures up in my old stomping ground, New Jersey, and I really want to go back there and experience it.
On OPEC, are they cutting production in an effort to try to get the numbers up? Are they not? Do they talk a big game and do something else? What's the story there?
Well, you know, when we've talked about that before, I've always insisted that it's really robust demand that supports crude prices more than curtailments of supply. So I think that's if not a non-starter, it's not a big winner for OPEC. I don't think that they can suppress oil prices merely by cutbacks in supply.
Yeah. And production cuts, again, if you want the world economy to rebound and do better, cheap oil prices do that, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, there's really a calculation there. I mean, Russia in particular, Russia would always be interested in higher prices for natural gas because they want to make more money. And this is true for the oil producers as well. They make as much money with oil at $90 a barrel as they would selling quite a bit more of it at $50 a barrel. So the difference being that they get to keep the oil on the ground. It's still there. They're not depleting their inventory. So so I guess it's sort of win-win for the producers. But you know, there's a lot of softness in crude prices right now to benefit of motorists everywhere.
Now, in Canada, there's kind of a public war against carbon taxes. British Columbia has had carbon taxes for over a dozen years. They've never reduced emissions. They just cost you more money. And they used to be targeted for green projects. Now it just goes into government coffers. The Prime Minister or Stats Canada, the Bank of Canada, did a study. The federal carbon tax has actually caused 18% of our inflation. And taxes aren't part of the calculation for your CPI, your cost of living index. Governments forget they're one of the major causes of people not having enough money to get things done.
Yeah, government is the number one agent for making sure we don't have enough money for anything.
So what's going on with gold?
Well, I think it's finally reached escape velocity here. You know, you had the feeling that all of the sovereign buyers of gold had been accumulating it hand over fist, reluctant to let the prices go. You know, I guess they wanted to get as much in storage as possible before gold began to respond in a more natural way to organic supply and demand. But, of course, all the paper gold out there is used exclusively, specifically, to suppress gold prices. You know, when you can create limitless supplies of paper gold with ETFs and all manner of derivatives, then it becomes relatively easy for the bullion bankers and their friends to manipulate and mainly suppress gold prices. But I think it's finally broken out here, and it looks like $2,000 an ounce is about to become support rather than resistance.
Hmm. If gold holders wanted to boost the price, would it help if everybody just said, I want a pound of gold back? I want the physical stuff delivered. Would that boost the price?
No, it would, I think, bring about a change in the rules, really. We're not going to have a situation where the riffraff or even sovereign buyers necessarily can get their hands on physical just for the fact of demanding it. There's a feeling that even the rules that govern delivery on COMEX futures contracts are going to have to change to avoid a run on U.S. gold that would be caused by the exercise of contracts in these futures markets. So we're going to have to essentially change the standard for paper gold, but we're at a point now where I think everybody realizes the importance of just accumulating it, of not selling it, of certainly not trading it for Bitcoin. And there's been a crucial psychological turn in gold. So I think from this point out, the bulls are going to be in charge.
Do you do anything with crypto? Because Bitcoin's been rising quite rapidly lately.
I've always felt that crypto is a fraud. I've never had but nobody has ever really answered the question, well, why should it be worth anything? And the best answer for that would be that it has value in transactions. Crypto, as a blockchain mechanism, can record a transaction securely, can't be tampered with. We can see that crypto is stolen much more easily than its creators had intended. There are a lot of hacks that have caused a great many billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin to go from the hands of its rightful owners to some criminal. But all right, so Bitcoin has value to the extent that a blockchain currency can record transactions securely, but it's never done it so well that it could replace credit cards for that function. And in fact, Bitcoin has never really been used as money. It's just like it's a speculative vehicle. People don't use it to pay for things. They just use it to hoard and speculate. And so if you put Bitcoin at that level, it does facilitate transactions in a secure way, you could make a good case that it really is worth something. But I would say that it would be worth no more than $2 or $3 per Bitcoin. Not certainly 70,000 where it topped. But so even though I'm constantly reviling Bitcoin as an absolute fraud, it's one of the big con jobs of this era, and it's been superseded by AI as the con job. Yes. But it's still going up, and in a purely technical way, I'm bullish on Bitcoin. Reason being, there's no supply. There's nobody out there that wants to short Bitcoin because they know they can't get it back, or it's difficult to get back. And so what it has going for it is just a lot of smart money, big money that holds Bitcoin, and they're no sellers. So that's what's driving Bitcoin. It's not even really demand. It's just an absence of supply.
Mm. We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Rick Ackerman. Rick, according to the U.S. government, The U.S. GDP rose 5.6% in the third quarter, opposed to a 5% raise. Whereas in Canada, the GDP fell 1.1% in the third quarter. A tale of two different countries, or are we just getting fudged numbers? Because I also noticed that Stats Canada revised their quarter two numbers, where they had actually seen a contraction in the economy, and now they say it grew 1.1%. So do they just recrunch the numbers or make them up? Are these numbers believable?
No, they're not believable, you know, at least not for those of us who have businesses or work in businesses and get salaries or whatever. You know, everybody's working really hard just to keep their head above water. And the idea of 5% growth, that's ridiculous. You know, I don't know how the figures are fudged, but it's a complete fiction. You know, if you look in particular at the retail landscape, and America is nothing if not a land driven by retail, it's not so robust. I mean, we've got some major industries like banks, for instance, closing branches like crazy. The big manufacturers, the auto manufacturers, have kind of hit a wall based on prices. Nobody can really afford a car, although there's still a lot of leasing going on out there. But if you look at every, I don't know, just pick your business. The only one, the only operator out there that seems to be doing brisk business is Amazon. But if you factor all the stores that it's put out of business into this 5% statistic, it's ridiculous. It's only credible, of course, because the stock market in its rambunctious craziness is within shooting distance of all-time highs. And people, that's the only thing that will make a purported 5% GDP growth even remotely credible.
AI, you said, has surpassed or supplanted Bitcoin as the big con out there. Companies still just attaching the letters AI to whatever they do, hoping that people will pour money into it?
Yeah, that's it. I wrote at rickackerman.com, this week's commentary, I wrote on that subject, on AI, and how it's really just a crock and everybody's selling it to death. It's really become the main source of feel-good news, things about AI, and it's replaced Bitcoin as the medium, the one thing that's going to make everybody rich and shorten everybody's work week and solve everybody's problems. And so it's really become the end-all and be-all. And to me, when I'm looking around for instances where AI has improved our lives, of course, the obvious reflection is on autocorrect. Whenever you're using your phone and it autocorrects something that was correct to begin with, you get a feeling of frustration, but also a knowledge of the state of the art in AI. And if autocorrect is the best that AI can do, we're all in big trouble.
What's going on with uranium?
I don't track uranium that closely. I do have some subscribers who have been interested in it for years. It's sort of like coal, you know. Over the last 50 years, there's never been a lack of stories that would drive the price of uranium higher. It's certainly in a nice uptrend. You look at the Cameco, which is a stock that's a pretty direct play in uranium. It's up from over the last few years from $5 to a current 45. So it's done really well. And I guess it comes partly out of the recognition that if we're going to change the allocation of our energy sources, shift them a little bit from carbon fuels to something else, that nuclear reactors, smaller ones, are going to do the job. But of course, that comes with a lot of regulatory baggage and technical hurdles. But it's mostly been, you know, the growth problem has come mostly in the financing part of it and the regulations. The technology is actually pretty good for smaller reactors. But you know, it's a chicken or egg thing as to whether or not a utility or a regional utility group will want to make the commitment that they have to start building these reactors.
And of course, we have governments mandating in certain jurisdictions that after 2035, you won't be able to buy a new ICE-engined vehicle. It'll all have to be electric. But there aren't enough charging stations and there aren't enough power stations for this transition.
Yeah, well, you know how easy it is to set out these rules, proposals, and goals that will come to fruition in another 10 or 15 years. It's like we can make any assumption we want, really, about 10 years from now, and who can challenge it?
And, of course, governments are in 4 to 5 year election cycles. You may not be around.
Also true. You know, politicians love to make rules that no one has to adhere to, really. We just set them out and say things that sound good, but are they doable? No.
And of course, the number one priority of every politician is getting reelected, not doing what's best for the economy or for the average person.
Well, take heart. The term limit amendment is slowly making its way toward doability. You know, there's been a group out there in the U.S. that for years has worked diligently to bring about term limits. And to me, that's probably the one thing that Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives, that we can all agree on. Let's throw the rascals out.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
I just noticed something with, I did mention Cameco. It's currently trading $45 a share, but I've got a rock solid resistance just above at 47.21. So you've been a long-term follower of the uranium trend. We could be very close to an important top there. Otherwise, let's see, I would say don't get scared out of gold now. If it practices its usual depredations, these raids that occur in gold, I think the people who have been trying to weasel the price down to suppress gold prices, they finally realized that their project is no longer tenable. The stock market, as I said, is close to a top, and I'm not going to be vague about it. I'm going to give you a $430 target in Microsoft. That's where I think the bull market will end. The stock is currently trading $337, so it's got, it's got a 53-point, a little less than 20% move remaining to it before it tops, but there's I think the odds that Microsoft will get to that number are very good, and I think that the odds of it getting easily past that number are close to zero. So I would use 430 in Microsoft as a bellwether number for a potential stock market top.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure, Jim. I appreciate your inviting me on.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.